Kenyan History Project on the 15th of September 1998. Can I have your full name, please?
Malcolm Nurse.
And do you have a nickname?
No.
So everybody knows you as Malcolm.
That's right.
And when did you first come to Dursingham?
January 1938.
So you've been here a jolly long while.
That's right, yeah, 60 years.
Right. So basically most of your life?
Yes.
Now, do any other members of your family live in the village?
My daughter still lives in the village. And I have an aunt live in the village, but that's all.
Right. Now, would you tell me anything you can remember about your earliest memories of living here?
Well, apart from the fact we used to live in Glebe Road right from the time we moved here. And my earliest memories are having to walk to school in the mornings.
So how old were you then?
5.
So you started school here?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, which school was that?
Dursingham Primary School.
Up at the top?
Yeah, up opposite the Coach and Horses.
Right. What can you remember about it?
I can remember the names of the teachers. There was Miss Hudson, we used to call Polly, used to live at Heacham. She used to cycle down there every day to work. She was very manly in her ways. Always wore a necktie and a shirt and necktie, and she was very mannish in her ways. And Miss Robinson was in the next class. Miss Cook, as she was then, she was later to be Mrs. Boyce, and then eventually Mrs. Barker, was in the next class. I can't remember who was in the next one, and then Mr. Mason Jones was the headmaster.
Right, and then you'd stay there and then transfer to where?
I stayed there until I was 11, and I took the scholarship, but I passed the scholarship, but I failed my interview for the King Edwards. So my mother then got me into Gaywood Park School at Gaywood.
Right, which was then a separate school, wasn't it? All boys.
That's right, all boys. There was a boys and girls school there.
That's
then,
right. What can you remember about those early days at the first school here? I mean, what sort of lessons did you do and so on?
Well, I think we'd done just the normal lessons that every school does. It was very interesting. I was always very happy at school. I liked school.
Yes.
And I was always very happy to be at school.
Of course, they were a lot stricter in those days, weren't
they? Oh, yes. Yes. I can remember getting a clip around the ear many a time from Mr. Mason Jones and Miss Hudson. Even in the primary class, I've had a slap around the ear, you know.
The teachers wouldn't get away with it today.
Oh, they wouldn't get away with it today. No, that's right.
Do you feel it's wrong that we've gone the other way?
I don't agree with as I say, slapping around the head like they did in those days, but I've had the cane many a time when I was at Gaywood Park. I was always getting the cane for one thing or another there, and I don't think that those did any harm at all.
But, I mean, were you particularly naughty or...?
No.
Everybody got the cane.
We used to play the different masters up. We knew which masters we could play up, and we used to play them up, and then he'd probably cane half the class. And
So really, caning you didn't do you any good either, if everybody went on doing it.
Well, it didn't really do us a lot of good, but it didn't do us any harm though, really, I don't think.
Right. Now, what memories have you got of your childhood in the village? You know, things you can particularly remember.
Well, we used to wander. I mean, in those days, we used to wander all over the village, up on the common, up the sand pits. We used to go bird nesting, and we used to take food up the sand pits, and we'd light a little fire or something up there, and cook an egg and things like that in a mansion polished tin or something. We'd clean a tin out and then chuck an egg in it and things like that.
When you say the sand pits, where exactly is that?
Up where the roundabout is now, up by Sandpit Cottages, at the other end of the village.
Right, where the moth was.
That's right, yes, up there, up that area.
Even though you never saw it.
Oh, I never did see the moth, no.
So generally you had a good time.
Oh, we had a smashing time when we were children.
Now, you can remember some of the important things, like the floods and so on, can you?
1953 floods, yeah.
Right, what can you tell us about that?
Well, I was in the RAF at the time, and I was home for the weekend, and clearly I can still remember there was a terrific gale blowing on that Saturday, and we went to Hunstanton to the pictures, and we came out of the cinema 10 o'clock time, I suppose, at night, and we caught the 10:30 bus home from Hunstanton, and the conductor on the bus said that the fleet at Lynn, which was then the bus station, was underwater, and that was the first we knew about it. The next morning, I can remember my stepfather brought myself and my sister a cup of tea up in bed, and he looked out at my sister's bedroom window in Cleve Road, straight across to the marsh, and he said, "Whatever's all that water?" And next thing the phone rang, and he was a special constable at the time, and they asked him to go on duty down at the station because people were pilfering stuff that was being washed up from the bungalows at Snetsham Beach.
People were actually going.
People, Dersenham people, and I know some of them, were actually going down there and taking stuff that was being washed up from the beach.
Oh dear.
This was true because I knew some of the people. They're dead now, but I did know some of them at the time.
So the people who lived in the houses were where? Had they run away or?
But the
owners of the houses.
Well, the houses down. There was bungalow. There was the bungalows from Snetsham Beach had been smashed, and the stuff was washed up by Dersenham.
So they were the holiday bungalows.
They were the holiday bungalows,
right.
But there were people living down there permanently in those days. I had a friend living down there who was drowned down there. He got the Albert Medal for bravery because he went back to get people out, and he was drowned. He was a school friend of mine from Gaywood Park.
Oh dear.
I went back from here that Sunday night to my camp at North Pickenham, and on the Monday morning we were sent down to Canary Island to relieve the floods down there. But when we got there, they didn't need us there. They had enough, and so we spent the next fortnight on Tilbury Docks filling up sandbags.
Now, also, you were here when the railway closed down, weren't you?
That's right.
Did you use the railway before?
We used to use the railway a lot when our children were small, because my wife's mother and father lived at Hunstanton.
Right.
And we used to go down there with the pram and put the pram on the train and go up to Hunstanton quite regular, well, every week practically, twice a week sometimes.
And did you go into Lynn on it?
Yes, I suppose we did. I can't really remember, but I suppose we went in occasionally with the pram, you know, when Gillian and Graham were small in the pram. Mm.
Did the closing of the railway really affect village life at all, do you think?
Oh, I think it did. Yes, I think it affected it quite dramatically, really.
In what way?
Well, holiday makers especially used to use the village. I mean, we used to use it if anybody went on holiday. I mean, they always went. They didn't have the cars in those days, so everybody used the train. I mean, you'd have to go to Lynn perhaps and then change. But in those days you could go straight from a direct train from Hunstanton to London.
Via Lynn?
Yeah, but it was a direct train, no change, and it was a direct train through.
So it must have had a pretty awful effect on the tourism in Hunstanton.
Well, I think it has done. I definitely think it has done.
I mean, eventually the buses overtook, didn't they?
Well, the buses did, but the car eventually overtook. I don't know whether today they would get that many people using the train to go to Hunstanton, But I still think that this line, especially if they ran the trains from Hunstanton to, say, to Wolverton, would be a big tourist attraction, the same as this train is like from Sheringham to Holt.
Yes, but the line's gone now, hasn't it?
The line is gone, unfortunately.
But the area of the line hasn't been dug up yet, has it?
Well, in parts it has. Well, it hasn't been dug up, but it's been built over at Heacham, for instance. The bungalows are built across where the line was.
So it couldn't be reopened?
They would have to divert the line if they were to reopen it.
Yeah, and it would, of course, take a lot of money, wouldn't it?
It would cost millions.
Now, when you were young, did you belong to any of the village organisations?
Yeah, I used to belong to the Boy Scouts. We used to go to Sunday school at the Methodist Church.
What can you remember about the Scouts?
Well, when we first joined the Scouts, Mr. Fisher was Scoutmaster. He used to have the fish and chip shop down on the main road. Well, he ran it during the war while his son was in the forces. Then his son took it over when he came out.
And that's the one that isn't there
anymore?
That's
the one which is now the Chinese takeaway.
Right, yeah.
He was the Scoutmaster then, with George Franklin, who lives up King's Cross now. He was Assistant Scoutmaster.
Right.
And then when they went away, Cliff Richards, the postman, took it over.
Yes.
And my first camp, recollection of going to camp, was we went to Sedgford to camp by the church of Sedgford, and we had to push a car trailer loaded with stuff. We had to push that all the way to Sedgford.
Because nowadays they go off for miles, don't they?
But we had to walk to Sedgford pushing this car trailer.
With all your stuff on.
With all the stuff on, that's right.
And yet I bet you boys enjoyed it.
Oh, we had
just as much.
We had a thoroughly great time. I can remember it poured a rain all the way home that day. We had to push it home in torrential rain.
But the young people that in those days didn't have the expectations that young people today have.
Oh no, I think we were more happy and more contented than the young people are today. I mean, we went out and done our own thing. And made our own entertainment. I mean, today you wouldn't allow your children to go out like you did. I mean, we used to walk down to the beach or go up, as I said, go up the common and that, or walk all around by the mill.
And your parents were never concerned?
No, they never considered it was any problem at all.
Whereas today, young people, they can't even walk to school, can they?
No, that's right. You didn't let your children, I mean, they say the common's not used much, but you didn't let your children go up to play on the common today.
Because of the threats?
Well, that's right. Of the problems there are today.
Yes. It's very sad, isn't it?
It is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you say you went to church, Sunday school?
Sunday school, that's right, at the Methodist Church.
Now, that, I think, do they still have one now?
They have a Sunday school at the one in Post Office Road.
Yes.
I went to the one in Sandy in Chapel Road. The old one was closed.
Ah, the old chapel.
The old chapel in Chapel Road.
I mean, how long has that been empty?
Gillian was christened there. And she's 40 now, so.
A long time.
It's been closed. It must be 30 years at least, I think.
Why did it close? Was it lack of?
I suppose it was lack of members, and so they combined the two chapels to, you know, make it viable, really.
So basically, you had two chapels almost side by side.
One in Post Office Road and one in Chapel Road.
And was there any difference in the kind of religion that was?
No, not really. No. One was, they called the Wesleyan Chapel in those days, and the other one was the Primitive Methodist. But they had the same preachers going to both chapels. They were both in the same, on the same plan, and in the Hunstanton and Docklands circuit.
Yes.
And so they had the same preachers. There was no difference in the teachings.
And did a lot of children go to Sunday school?
There was a lot. We had big Sunday schools in those days. Both chapels had big Sunday schools.
Now, why was that? when hardly anybody goes today?
Well, it was the done thing those days, wasn't it, to send your children, I think, send your children to Sunday school. Today, people just don't seem to bother so much.
Do you think that just people just don't believe in religion anymore?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's right to a certain degree. A lot of people haven't got time, perhaps they say they haven't got time for it these days to go to church. I think people are just as religious today as they always were, but they just don't seem as if they have time to go to attend church.
I think people lead such busy working lives now, don't they?
That's right, yeah, oh yeah, yes, I think so.
And any spare time, there's television, isn't there?
Well, that's right, yeah.
So it was totally different. But
people have to work, I think they have to work with the costs of things today, people have to work longer.
But do you think it's because people want more things today? Because your generation were much more satisfied with little, weren't they?
Well, of course, everybody wants more. Everybody wants more, don't they? Everybody wants it. If something comes out, everybody wants it. And prices have gone up, things have gone up in price, and they work to get these things and to make life that much easier for them, really, because life in our time, well, life for my mother was very hard, I thought.
Well, yeah, I mean,
when I think back.
Yeah, can you remember when you were a child the kind of life your mother lived?
Oh yeah, I can remember her having to get up, sort of, because my father, he joined the RAF in 1939, so he was away all the war. But my mother had to get up on a Monday, it was wash day. Get up in the morning, light the copper, heat the water up and everything. And it was a day's work to do the washing in those days.
Yes, yes, they boiled them up, didn't
they,
in the copper.
That's right.
And everything had to be mangled.
That's right, they had the big mangle, she had just had to wash and mangle.
And what did they use for soap? Like today we all use these liquids.
Well, I think if I remember rightly, my mother used to use rinse soap. Which was a
sort of
washing powder in those days, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, everything had to be hung out.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, yeah, there was no drawers or anything like that. It was hard work for them in those days.
Yes. Would you say they were less happy than modern mums?
No, I don't think so. My mother was always, I think she was always content with what she had.
Yes. It was because everybody else basically was the same.
Well, everybody, as you say, everybody was the same. Everybody had more or less the same in those days. Nobody had a car, or very few people had a car.
Yes, so there wasn't this need to keep buy.
No, that's right.
Now, what would you say is the most important day you've ever spent in the village?
I don't know really. I can't really say that there is any special day. I think one of the best days I've had in recent years was when we achieved the opening of the bypass, you know, from the council.
Yes, now, certainly Mr. Pratt said this.
Hmm.
Why did you feel so strongly about that?
Well, because, I mean, the traffic in those days was horrendous coming through the village. I mean, if you went out from this road, it took you a quarter an hour, 20 minutes to cross the road, at weekends especially.
Can you remember the policeman who used to stand at the corner? Where
I can remember the policeman standing at the corner. Well, my stepfather, he used to stand on that corner as a special. He used to be on that corner, and Mr. Ricks and Mr. Wells around the village, they used to be on there at the latter time, but the first policeman I can remember standing on that corner was early part of the war, was a Mr. Hall. He lived at Snettisham. He's actually a retired policeman, but he came back on duty during the war because a lot of the policemen had been called up.
Right.
And why I can remember him was because again, I was going to Sunday school, and my mother said to me, when you go up the road, you go up as far as the corner and wait for Mr. Hall to let you across the road. Because, being a kid, I thought, well, I can get across all right. So I dashed across, and at that time there was a car coming, and, you know, very near got run over. And Mr. Hall gave me a clip of the ear.
Yes,
yeah,
because it was so dangerous. So it really was a bit of a nightmare if you lived this side of the road trying to get that.
That's right, yeah, it was.
So what about the getting to school then in the mornings? Was that... Did they have a lolly? They must have had a lollipop.
No, there was nothing like that in those days. Good gracious.
So you just had to scuttle across?
Well, you scuttled across. There wasn't... I mean, we're going back to the war years. And there wasn't that much traffic, apart from military traffic. There was a lot of military traffic about in those days, because we had quite a lot of troops in the village.
Right, yes. But the traffic was worst, the sort of 10 years before the bypass.
Oh, that's so, yeah. Yeah, after the war, when the car, people gradually got cars, and sort of the last 10 to 15 years before the bypass was built.
Yeah.
That was the worst. But the bypass had actually been first talked about, from what I'm told, in about 1928.
A bit like the Hardwick flyover.
That's right, yeah.
Going on forever.
Yeah.
Yes, so really it did need doing.
Mm.
And what was, do you think, the worst time you can ever remember in the village?
Well, I suppose the floods, though the floods didn't actually affect Dursingham, so they came up as far as the station, the water came up as far as the station. Really, I can't say that I've had a bad time at all. I've enjoyed my time in Dursingham.
Yes, yes, most people seem to have enjoyed living
here.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to go anywhere else.
Now, a lot of your time here has been working for the council. Would you like to explain a bit about that?
Well, I've been on the parish council now since 1966.
Right, so that's a long time.
32 years. I've been 32 years last June.
What are some of the things that the council have sort of helped to bring about, would you say, apart from the bypass?
Well, the sports pavilion on the pastures was quite a big project in the village, but not necessarily with the council, though I represented the council on the fundraising committee for the new pavilion on the pastures.
Because there was nowhere...
There was only a wooden hut at that time. We just had a wooden hut on the pastures.
Right, and that was mainly for the cricket.
That's for cricket and football. That's
yes.
Right.
And how did you raise the money for that?
Well, we had fetes and various functions, and the money in bingos and the money rolled in, and we eventually got the pavilion built.
Did you feel that, you know, the village really wanted this thing?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think they did at the time.
Yes.
I think probably in those days, there was more people in the village who helped with the village functions that run in the village. Today, I feel that we're more of a commuter village, really, for Lynn.
That's right.
And the people coming into the village now, but not all of them, there are some of them come in and are a good help to the village. But wherever you look in the village today, whatever committee you go to, it's the same, seem to be the same people from one committee to the next.
Absolutely. The same few.
That's right.
Sort of stalwarts of the village.
Yes. I mean, some of these small villages around here raised thousands and thousands of pounds for such as a new village hall, and that there's a lot of villages around here have got new village halls recently, much smaller villages than us.
So you think it's because we're not like a complete village? We're more like, as you say, a community?
I think so, yeah.
So we'll never have that real village spirit?
You see, it's always that we got so many people coming into the village now that it's always the commuter village or the retired people moving into the village. I mean, we've got no... If you go around Mount Batten, the new Mount Batten estate, or the Centre Vale estate, and I would guess that 75-80% of them must be retired people.
Why do you think that's so?
Well, because it's such a nice little village to live in, isn't it? I mean, it's handy for the seaside, and it's near enough to King's Lynn to get into shop, and yet it's quiet.
Yes, and we don't seem to have quite the vandalism and the...
We definitely don't have the... I mean, we have a certain amount, I will admit, but we don't have anywhere near the vandalism that some villages get.
No. So, in a way, because the village consists so much of elderly people, we're not going to get that, are we?
Well, we hope we don't.
Yes, because it's the old elderly people tend not to go around...
Well, that's true, but we do get to... On occasions, we get reports on the parish council of youths from coming into the village and meeting in the village from other places, from King's Lynn and Stanton and such like.
Right, so that's one of the... Can you think of any other complaints that you've had about the village to the council over the years that have particularly stuck in your mind?
Not really. We don't... We seem to get by without having too many. I mean, we get the regular complaints about footpaths and street lighting and that type of thing. But we don't have anything really out of the way in complaints, or very rarely have anybody come in. So I think most people must be quite satisfied with the way the village is being run.
And is the parish council very restricted by what it can do?
Yeah, we are restricted. I mean, we can't give people the planning permission has to come from King's Lynn, and certain plans go against us. We get all the plan. If there's any building to be done in the village, we get all the plan applications come to us, and we can recommend whether they go through or not. But sometimes they don't take any notice of us.
In other words, you feel you're overruled?
We're overruled in certain ways. For instance, the flat tops at Bowdens. The parish council fought to stop those being built.
Really? You mean the little houses?
Yeah, the little houses opposite Bowdens in the meadow. That was a lovely little meadow there, a lovely open meadow with views across to those cottages. And they wanted to build, in the first instance, they wanted to build on the whole field. But in the end, we fought that, but in the end we had to compromise and allow them to build on one side of the field.
Certainly, from my point of view, it was a very successful compromise, because you've still got that sort of open field.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And the way the houses and flats were built... really toned in beautifully with the cottages at the back.
I think the builder made a very good job of them. I mean, I was against it, but I think he made a very good job.
And to be fair, that field used to be a bit of a mess.
Well, it did at times. I mean, people didn't... That used to be all right, but then it wasn't cut and people used to leave it. And it did look... Yeah, I agree with you. It did look a mess.
I think it looks better now.
It looks a lot nicer now. Yes, that's true.
Now, one of the problems in this village, as we've discussed with a lot of different people, is the fact that once the last development that used to be Mr. Hipkins has gone, basically that's it for the building.
We hope so, anyway.
And everybody's very anxious that the village shouldn't get any bigger.
That's right.
So all builders can do is look for little existing... That's right. Now... There's two very interesting ones going on at the moment that you'd probably be able to tell us something about. One of them is opposite the pub on the corner that goes up to Dodds Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Now, can you remember what existed there before?
Yes. because when I first left school, I worked there.
Right, tell us something about that.
I worked, well, actually, during, when I first moved to the village, it was a butcher's shop. And right. Mr. Lyons had it.
Right.
And
it was like built sideways on...
Well, the house was built sideways on, the shop was in the front.
Yes.
Opposite the Coach and Horses.
Yes.
And the house was sort of built sideways on behind it.
So it was front ways onto Dodds Hill.
That's right, yes. Right. Yeah, the front way was onto Dodds Hill. Mr. Lyons was there, he was the butcher. He committed suicide, unfortunately, during the war. He had some problems with the Ministry of Food at the time, and he committed suicide. I left school in Christmas 1948, and Mr. Richards, that's Cliff Richards' brother.
Right.
He had a fish shop. He had a wet fish shop there.
Right.
And I went to work there when I left school as an errand boy. And there was a dairy at the side as well, which St. Ian Wright from Hunstanton had at that time, but then Mr. Richards from down, Jimmy Richards from down Whitehorse Drive, and Mr. Gilbert, who used to be down Bank Road, they took the dairy over.
Right, so it was a butcher's, then it was a dairy and a fish shop.
There was a fish shop in the shop, and a dairy was in the garage, and which have now that barn and garage which have now converted into a living accommodation. That was the dairy.
Because I first knew it as a sort of antique
That's
shop.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, Chris... I can't remember his surname. Then Chris had a chap named... It was Christian name. He had that as an antique shop, and he died quite young. He had a heart attack and died quite young. But his wife lived there until 3 or 4 years ago.
And it really became very run down.
Oh, it became very dilapidated, yeah. That's right.
So now it was completely, basically removed,
that's
apart
right.
from like a wall.
That's it, yes.
To keep the same...
Yeah.
So what is exactly going to be there now?
Well, the barn has been converted to a dwelling. And
is that one dwelling? Or
yeah, that's one.
Oh, that's one big one.
I think the barn is going to be one dwelling, and then there's two houses being built there.
Right, yes. And they all seem to face inwards to a courtyard.
I haven't really looked at it.
But
from what I can read, yes, I think you're right. From what I can remember the plans when they came up to the parish council, I think you're right there.
So that will be three dwellings?
There'll be three dwellings, yeah, from what I can remember.
And then, of course, the latest one of all is the one next to the old hall.
Yeah.
Now, that also used to look rather strange once again sideways on. Now, what can you tell us about that?
Oh, you mean the one Mr. Teelby's
house?
That's
right.
Well, that has been bought by a doctor from away somewhere. A doctor has bought that, and he's having, from what I'd understood in the first instance, the house was going to be partially demolished and used as workshops and garages. And he's having a bungalow, a luxury bungalow, built in the grounds.
Because how big are the actual grounds?
They're very big grounds, yeah. Funny, I was really talking last night to Cliff Richards. We went to the gamekeepers to a British Legion meet, and we was looking over there and talking about that. So, and I remember looking at that when the planning application came in, first planning application came in for about six houses on that site.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
And previous to that, Mr. Teelby told me when we went there that they had plans drawn up for about 20 flats.
Oh. Now it looks well over an acre, is it?
Oh, I would imagine it is. There's quite a large garden, and then there's tennis courts at the back.
And yet all it was a big house.
There was that one big house there.
Sort of behind the wall.
That's right, yeah.
Yes. Ah, so now there's going to be a big bungalow.
There's going to be a luxury bungalow there from what I can remember of the plans.
Yes, and some outside workshops.
Yes, but I haven't really looked at that, but it looks like they nearly took the whole cottage down.
There's just an end.
The end wall.
Yes, I suppose that's to meet planning requirements. Possibly, yeah. That you've got to have a little bit of the original.
Mm.
Now, is there anywhere else in the village that has the potential of a building plot?
I hope not. I think we've had enough building in the village as it is, really. I mean, there may be one or two sites for infilling. But
can't
I mean,
think of many.
No, I can't really think of many. I mean, the site ran opposite the church. I mean, we fought against that. We didn't want that built.
But that big house.
The big house and yes. The cottages there.
Yes, I mean, but in fact, that looks quite nice.
Well, it looks quite nice, but I still think it would have looked nicer if they had the whole...
Just the woods.
The wood, as it was, had deteriorated.
Yes.
But I think that it deteriorated on purpose so that they could get building permission to, you know... People say, well, that'd be better to have buildings there than have a...
So who owned that land?
Well, Mr. Masson owned it.
What, all of that with the woods and everything?
Yeah, he owned all that. But Miss Stratton... Stratford. Stratford's stores in Norfolk Street.
Yes. She owned that?
The lady, Miss Stratton, she used to live in Sydney Street, I think it was Sydney Street, no, Chase Avenue in King's Lynn. She used to own that.
And yet there was no house on the whole lot?
No, but she owned the old hall and all at one time.
And that was the land belonging to the old
hall? That was the land belonging to all that land at the back there, where the majority of that land at the back there, which is all built on there with bungalows, was all land belonging to the old hall.
Now, the old hall was another... quite important building, although all was awkwardly stuck on that corner.
Oh, yeah.
What did that used to be years ago?
Well, prior to the 1914 war, there was a German lived there, the name of Janik. That was why it was called Janik's Corner.
It was always known as Janik's Corner. Right.
There was a German there, and he was a expert in lilies of the valley, and he had I have seen photographs. I haven't got any, but I have seen photographs of the gardens at the back there, and they were beautiful gardens at the back there. And
he used to grow.
Lilies of the valley, and he had fantastic gardens there. So I'm told.
Yes.
I can't really remember much. Well, we moved here in 1938, and I was only 5 years old.
Yes.
But then the troops took that over during the war. Uh-huh. That was the troops were there. The Canadians were there. The 8th Army was there during the war.
And had the owner died by then, or?
Yes. Well, I can't even remember. I don't know who actually owned it in those days. I mean, Janik was there in the early parts of the century, but who actually owned it at that time, I don't honestly know.
And do you think it was then that it began to get... Because it was in a pretty bad shape,
it
wasn't
never did,
it?
It never was any good. Much. They made some flats upstairs in the hall. There was one or two flats in the hall. Gene Richards, something, you know, Gene and Eric Richards.
Yes.
They lived there when they first got married.
Right.
They lived in one of the flats over the top there. And
I remember there was a rather odd lady who used to always wear a man's cap and Wellington.
That's right, yeah, Phyllis Jerry.
Right.
She lived there. They owned it in the latter part of the time. They owned it.
So who would they have bought it from?
I don't know. It was actually owned by Mr. Well, Phyllis was a Kirkland.
Right.
They had the outfitter's shop in Norfolk Street in Lynn.
That's right, yes.
Which is where Spoils was afterwards. I don't know if you remember Kirkland's been there.
Yes.
They lived on the main road up towards Snetsham on the left hand side, just past Woodside Avenue. They lived there.
Right, yes.
And that was owned by, well, that she was a Kirkland, but her husband actually owned the old hall in those days, Joe Jerry.
Right, so that was Mrs. Jerry.
She was Mrs. Jerry.
So she was, when right. I've known her, presumably was she a widow then?
Yes, that's right. It, yeah.
Yes, and then it really...
And they had a clubhouse at the back there. They used to run a club there. There was a club there.
Because I can remember, I think the boys used, when they were first in the Scouts, did they have some round there before the Scout Hall was built?
We had a Scout Hut in the grounds there, yes, that's right. The Scout Hut was behind the house, which has just been demolished.
Yes.
It was behind there. We had, that was when we was in the Scouts, we had the Scout Hut there.
Right. Because Mr. Riches is, who took over running the Scouts,
that's
a
right,
long
yes.
while ago,
yeah.
He's going to tell me all about.
Yeah,
so well, he would have been there then?
Yeah, I was one of his Scouts. As a
right.
boy, I was one of his Scouts.
Ah, good.
Yeah.
So that's another valuable plot
yeah.
that's gone. Mm. There was the, what we used to call the burnt-out house along Chapel Road.
Yeah.
Which is now completely houses.
Yeah, well, that was another, that was a beautiful house, that was. Mr. Lloyd Pratt.
That's right.
Lived there. And, it's still a mystery what happened to that house, because they were refused planning permission to build on that field.
Right.
They were refused, but that, this was before I went on the parish council.
And Mr. Lloyd Pratt was living there then, was he?
No, the old people had died, and the son owned the house. There was nobody actually living there at the time.
Right. And he wanted to
and
have...
he wanted to build, have... be able to build on the back there, and
yes.
he was refused plan permission because there was no entry onto the field. Well, there was an entry, I think, probably you could have got on from Fern Hill, but there was no real good entry onto the field, so he was refused plan permission.
And he didn't want to sell it as it was?
Obviously not, because the next thing we knew, it just went up in smoke.
And was that while he was away?
The day it went up in smoke, he had been in the village. That's all I'm going to say. He didn't live in the village. He had, I think, he'd moved to South Africa. But he was back in the village the day that went up in smoke in the night.
And no doubt the villagers must have.
There
gossiped.
Was a lot of there yes. was a lot of talk at the time.
Yes,
but nothing was proved and. Unfortunately, he was murdered in South Africa.
Really?
Yeah, he was a homosexual, and the little black boy stabbed him.
Oh my goodness!
And he was caught and sent to prison, and he escaped. He escaped from prison, and he'd never been caught. From what I've heard, anyway, he's never been caught.
Now, presumably, the land that belonged to him, the, when it was all cleared, he must have inherited the wealth from the land.
Well, he must have done. He must have made a fortune, I would have thought.
But it didn't, in the long run, do him
but
any
didn't
good?
Do him any good, no. That's true.
Oh, dear. So basically now, all the big old properties that would be valuable for building land are now built on.
I think so, yes.
So hopefully we won't get any bigger.
Well, I hope we don't anyway. I think we've got we're all grown really.
Yes, yes. Now, what would you say are the biggest changes you've seen in the village? Would you say it's just the enormous growth?
The growth is definitely the biggest change.
Yes.
Plus the with the bypass, the drop of the traffic.
Yes. If anybody from away said to you, now what is the centre of Dursingham, what would you say?
Well, I suppose the church is the centre of the village, really.
Yes, but it isn't in a central position, is it?
Well, no, that's true.
Where would you say is the actual centre of the village now?
I suppose the round sort of Budgeons area,
yes.
around there.
This seems to be the general.
Budgeons is sort of fairly central to both sides of the village, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And no matter what, it does seem to be an asset to the village. I mean, we've got a lot of good things in the village, haven't we? Through being that bit bigger.
Yes, yes, we have. I've never been in Budgeons since it opened.
Really?
Because I was I opposed the application when it came, because I didn't think that we needed a supermarket like that in the village, to be perfectly honest. I mean, we have a very good super, a good mini market in Thaxter's, and we had smaller shops in the village at the time.
Yes.
Which have since closed.
Yes.
But and so I didn't think that that was a suitable site, and I still think that's an eyesore. I think it's a monstrosity of a building.
Yes, it doesn't really lend itself to the village,
does
it?
Oh, no, I mean, the Dun Cow was a beautiful, I thought was a lovely building, the Dun Cow, and I think it would have been nice if that could have been turned into a nursing home or something like that.
Yes, because it had a bit of character.
It had a bit of character about it. I mean, this place just looked like a big barn.
Yes. Now, what are your ideas about the millennium in Dursingham? I mean, what has come to the council as being the main recommendations to celebrate it?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I haven't thought that much about the millennium, because to me that's just another, it's just another year. I don't see what all the
Fuss is about.
What all the fuss, to be perfectly honest, I don't see what all the fuss is about, really.
No.
I mean, it's nice to have, like you're doing here, having an interview and finding out about the village over the last 70 or 80 years. But I don't think that the amount of money that is being spent in some of these places is worthwhile.
It's the biggest thing that's been suggested, of course, as you know, is this village hall.
Mm.
And you mentioned yourself that for a village of this size, we don't really have a good modern hall.
That's right.
But you must have been to some of the meetings. What would you say, from your point of view as on the council, are the main problem?
Apathy with the people in the village. Because, as I said to you earlier, some of these smaller villages have raised thousands of pounds and built them and got some beautiful village halls. There are plenty of grants available, from what I'm told. I missed the meeting here, unfortunately, when the gentleman came to talk about grants and that. I missed that. But I feel that there are grants available, and with a village of this size, we should be able to do something.
So you'd like to see one, really?
I would. I'd like to see a modern hall in the village.
Right, now where would you put it?
That, again, is a difficult. The only place I can see is for the parish council, or the village, to buy the best of the pastures. And put it on there with where the sports facilities and that are.
Ah, the pastures. Now, isn't it marshy there?
Yeah, but it can be drained. I mean, normally there's the down Chapel Road, where those houses are built opposite King's Cross.